court will proceed to the sixth case, Morales v. Ashcroft. Mr. Pollard.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Scott Pollack. I represent Celia Morales. She appeals the immigration judges and the Board of Immigration Appeals denials of her request for cancellation of removal and ordering her removed to Mexico. Now, occupied as we may be in our daily professional concerns, it may not be easy for any of us to visualize the physical landscape or the interpersonal interactions around the southern U.S. border with Mexico. But news informs us that with an estimated 7 to 8 million undocumented aliens in the United States, the prevalence of drug and human smuggling, crime, victimization, the threat of terrorism, and hundreds of tragic deaths each year of desperate people crossing the border, the mission of the U.S. Border Patrol appears to be as relentless as that of the mythical Greek Sisyphus, who is condemned to remain in hell, rolling a border up the hill forever.
Well, Mr. Powell, I mean, actually, having spent approximately 10 years of my life in Texas, I wouldn't make too many assumptions about, who knows, the Texas border. But I have a legal question for you, which is whether, or what role you think the decision in the Romales matter should play in our consideration of this case. We're told by the government that now this issue of the interpretation of the continuous residence requirement has been addressed and that Chevron deference is due to what the agency has said in Romales. Maybe you could look at that.
Certainly. I think first this court should find that Romales does not control this case. And second, that it was wrongly decided. To address whether or not Romales was wrongly decided, well, why doesn't it apply to this case?
Yeah, let's look at why it might not apply to this case first. Are you going to argue factual distinctions?
Certainly. Well, first of all, we don't know whether Romales was considered by the board because it was an affirmance without opinion.
Another one of those affirmances without opinion.
Right. And all we do know is the immigration judge decided this case based on the Flutie doctrine that was taken out of the Immigration and Nationality Act by the enactment of the 1996 Act. We also would draw a factual distinction. The major distinction between this case and Romales, as well as the case decided in the Ninth Circuit, the Vasquez-Lopez case, is that Ms. Morales had 13 years of continuous residence in the United States prior to her departure, her brief departure. When she came back into the United States, having entered the U.S. and being encountered by the U.S. Border Patrol, she was clearly eligible to apply for cancellation of removal. This important factor is not present in the Romales case, it's not present in the Vasquez-Lopez case. And so on that basis alone, we would say that there is a vast difference between this case and those.
Now, would there be any reason that we should consider, particularly because this streamlined review was involved, remanding this to the BIA so that it can decide for itself in the first instance whether these various distinctions would affect its I mean, there are a number of distinctions, one of which you've mentioned, but is there value in taking that approach here?
I think that it wouldn't be an unreasonable action for the court to take, because it would give the board the opportunity to address for the first time, first to reconsider its Romales decision, and we do attack that decision in our briefs. I really think that the BIA in Romales did not consider all of the statutory and regulatory provisions relating to voluntary departure, which would indicate to me that Congress intended nothing less than a formal removal order to interrupt continuous residence for the purposes of cancellation of removal. In addition, it would give the board an opportunity to possibly carve out an exception from the Ramalez decision where an alien such as Ms. Morales, who should have been given a hearing as to her right to remain in the United States but was not given that hearing, whether or not she could state a claim of continuous residence, notwithstanding the fact that she was stopped and returned. I want to bring out one other factual distinction or procedural distinction that sets her case apart from any of the other ones that have been discussed in the briefs, and that is simply that she never requested voluntary departure. She never agreed to its terms or conditions as would be required under the regulations. The regulations say before someone receives an administrative voluntary removal, they have to request it, and they have to be provided with certain advisals.
I take it the record here is silent as to whatever conversations happened between Ms. Morales and the border guards on those occasions that she just went back to Mexico without any fuss.
That appears to be the case. On this record, we don't know, but we can certainly conclude that she did not know of her right to apply for cancellation of removal at the time that she voluntarily departed the United States. Otherwise, she would have exercised that right. So I think that the board's decision in Ramalez, as well as the Ninth Circuit's decision in Vazquez-Lopez, they're both premised on an alien's intelligent, knowing, and voluntary agreement to not return to the United States after voluntary departure in lieu of being placed in removal proceedings. In this particular case, Ms. Morales would have been much better off being placed in removal proceedings because she could then have had her claim to exceptional hardships to her family members heard by an immigration judge and could have had the opportunity to remain legally in the United States.
Okay, could I jump ahead and ask you, if we get beyond Ramalez and we just look at the way that the board interpreted D2, in whatever light you want, you know, Chevron, de novo, anything, I'm not really focusing on that right now. The language says an alien shall be considered to have failed to maintain continuous physical presence in these circumstances that are described. Why isn't it actually a reasonable way to read this thing to say this is a situation where you must find no continuous physical presence, but it doesn't say shall be considered only, or it doesn't say only in these circumstances. It just says you have to do it in these circumstances, and we aren't saying anything about the rest. Why isn't that the way to read this?
It's not the way to read it, because when you read that section in context with a couple of other sections in the Immigration and Nationality Act, it's clear that Congress had in mind what particular acts on the part of an alien or on the part of the government would cut off continuous residence or would otherwise render someone ineligible for cancellation of removal. And those acts are finite. It's not just the ones in 240D, but the list, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, there are 5 of them. There are service of a notice to appear, commencing proceedings, cuts off someone's continuous residence. Certain criminal acts will cut off someone's continuous residence. Absences exceeding the length of time that Ms. Morales was outside of the United States will certainly cut off continuous residence under D2. A prior removal order makes someone specifically ineligible for cancellation of removal under INA Section 241A5. And finally, the voluntary removal or voluntary departure section itself says that a failure to comply with a voluntary departure order renders someone ineligible for 8 U.S.C. 1229b2 relief, cancellation of removal. And before a voluntary departure can have this effect, the individual must be advised of the consequences and must ask for it and accept the terms and conditions. I see that my time is up. If you have any other questions, rebuttal time.
You have a little rebuttal time.
Okay, thank you.
Petrillo?
May it please the court, my name is Jason Patil, appearing on behalf of the respondent in this case, United States Attorney General John Ashcroft. The issue here is whether any of the petitioner's four departures from the United States under the threat of institution of removal proceedings prevent her from establishing eligibility from cancellation of removal, where she must show continuous physical presence in the United States immediately preceding the date of such application. Today, for this court, I will address the significance of the appropriate standard of review, the statute's consistency with the agency interpretation, and describe the various reasons why the agency interpretation is permissible. The appropriate standard of review for this court, as clarified by the Supreme Court's decision in Aguirre v. Aguirre, is that provided by Chevron versus Natural Resources Defense Council, which sets forth a two-step inquiry.
Well, wait a minute. We know about Chevron. I want to talk about the significance of Romales to this case, since, of course, it comes between the decision that's made and the BIA's action. So we don't know whether the agency would think that any of the factual differences between Ms. Morales' situation and those that were before us in Romales would be of weight to the agency. And I think some of them could well be important. For example, the lack of notice that occurs when somebody is caught by a border guard and they just say, fine, you know, I'll walk back over the bridge when they're, you know, in one of the border towns. That's not the same thing as being told, you know, here are the situations, unless you think that these are just frivolous notices that are made, but they really aren't. They're important notices, and we don't know what the agency would do. So I'm not sure that we have before us a direct appeal from Romales. We don't. We're the wrong circuit, for one thing, you know.
The factual distinctions alleged by the petitioner in the argument are not significant in so far.
Well, you say they aren't, but you're the lawyer. You're not the agency, and I don't know what the agency thinks.
Matter of Romales was decided prior to the board's issuance of an affirmance without opinion.
But it was an affirmance without opinion, so we don't know if the board was thinking about Romales, if the board is only looking at the IJ's opinion. The board may have not even had Romales in mind. We don't have any idea.
Matter of Romales is a precedential decision establishing a rule of law which
that
the board must follow.
The board, though, has decided, because of this horrendous backlog it had in these situations where it would go 10 years between an IJ decision and a board decision, which you're probably familiar with, and they're always distressing when we see them, that it needed to streamline. Okay, you streamline, but you lose information in the process. We don't know whether anybody in the board ever focused on the difference between these situations and a situation like Ms. Morales's, where there are a series of voluntary back and forth, and then in the aggregate she's gone for 30 days. We just don't know.
That is correct, but the law of the land that has been interpreted and delegated from the Attorney General's power to interpret continuous physical presence does consist of a ruling by the Board of Immigration
Appeals in a particular situation, and why that has to be extended to a new situation is my question.
The facts at issue in Matter of Romales are extremely similar to
I'm aware of what the facts are. They you say they're similar, he says they're really different.
I'd be happy to address the factual dissimilarities alleged by petitioner. First, that in this case, petitioner had 13 years of continuous physical presence. This, as indicated in respondent's brief, is not a material fact because the statute requires the 10 years immediately precede the date of application, which is not the case here. There's an allegation that the petitioner does not know of the right to apply for cancellation of removal. There is no obligation to provide a petitioner notice of a right to apply for cancellation of removal. Furthermore, in this case, the factual record reflects at administrative record 90 and pages 101 that the petitioner did not tell the Border Patrol that she was living in the United States with a lawful permanent resident husband and United States citizen children. And thirdly, the assertion that she did not know of the right to apply for relief is contravened by the fact in the administrative record that her husband, in December of 1998, 4 months prior to the first time she was intercepted by the Border Patrol, had been granted suspension of deportation from the immigration court, which would tend to show that she was, in fact, aware that relief was available. And therefore, that factual distinction is not pertinent in this case. The Congress has not spoken to the direct question before this court of whether or not departure pursuant to an administrative grant of voluntary departure breaks continuous.
Well, it hasn't unless you read B2 as describing the circumstances where the break in residence, break in presence is there, and leaving, of course, nobody says that the Attorney General has to exercise his discretion one way or the other with respect to this woman. The question is, does she get to present her case to the Attorney General and his delegates, of course? So if he thinks going back and forth a few times disqualifies you, he's more than free to say, this is not a person worthy of exercising my discretion. But we're focusing on whether this statute has, as it were, I mean, somebody said, occupied the field with respect to the 90-180 days and moved the process along one step.
And this statute has not, insofar as it only prescribes bars to establishing presence, which are mandatory if an alien is absent from the United States more than 90 days in one instance or more than 180 days in the aggregate.
Well, if you read it that way, now there are other ways of looking at the legislative history and other things that suggest that really it is. This is the one that talks about presence. We're going to worry about other things somewhere else.
With due respect to the legislative history, there is no legislative history cited by the petitioner in the opening brief or the reply brief, which suggests that this provision intends to preempt the Attorney General's discretion in deciding what continuous physical presence means. And without regard to those items which Congress has determined will break continuous physical presence, there still remains discretion by the agency with respect to determining if other acts, such as departing the United States voluntarily,
break continuous physical presence. So you think he could add to the list of crimes? Looking at another thing that disqualifies somebody from this remedy of
can the Attorney General create a rule that says...
Right. The Congress says there's a certain list of crimes. The Attorney General says, oh, I'd like to throw in a few more things. You know, driving over the speed limit.
Those determinations by the Attorney General are subject to review in the appellate courts under a Chevron standard.
Really? You think Chevron, when Congress has specified a list of crimes, you think that there's still, that the Attorney General inherently can just add?
If they are, well, with regard to one of the regulations at issue before the court with respect to NACARA, in addition to the Attorney General identifying voluntary departure under the threat of removal as an additional basis that breaks continuous physical presence, so too does the Attorney General identify leaving the United States for an improper criminal purpose.
No, I'm not looking at the continuous physical. I'm trying to figure out how far you're going with the Attorney General's discretion to embroider this statute. And if you think that he has such discretion in the physical presence branch, maybe you think he has this discretion with respect to the crime branch, or maybe you think he has this discretion with respect to all the other branches, and he can sit there and just write whatever statute he wants.
Please forgive me, Judge Wood. I was mistaking your question as not being outside of the context of continuous physical presence.
It was outside the statutory-wide.
And no, I now understand your question to refer to a ground of removal if the Attorney General can simply add in a new crime where the Congress has specified a number of specific and incredibly detailed lists of crimes.
I think
the answer is no in a situation like this, and the reason why is because Congress has spoken to the direct question of issue of which of these would render an alien inadmissible. The overall legislative purpose and the purpose of voluntary departure, which are factors to assess under the Chevron analysis, also support the board's and the immigration judge's decision in this case. The overarching purpose of the act, which enacted these provisions, is to remove aliens presently as soon as legally possible and to limit exceptions to that rule. There is no contrary legislative history cited by petitioner, and the purpose of effectuating a voluntary return to a country other than the United States is to end or terminate presence in the United States, and
right,
the Supreme Court has said as much.
Throw out one thing. You seem to think that if somebody's gone for a week, comes back, and then they're gone for another week later and comes back, then they've only been here for a week. But the actual language of D2 has a strong implication to the contrary, because it also says for periods in the aggregate exceeding 180 days. So the statute clearly contemplates that there are short trips that don't break presence, that it's actually the 13 years before, because you've got all the way up to 180 days if they're shorter trips.
There is strong implied support in the statute.
Well, what does the aggregate 180 days mean? Can it possibly mean anything else than that?
It may not.
No. So in other words, your theory that she's already disqualified because she hadn't been there for 13 years after the second trip back can't be right under the statute.
Yes, it can, given the language immediately preceding the date of application, which is present in 240A.
So we read out any periods in the aggregate exceeding 180 days. We say, well, Congress is just kidding about that part.
Well, if they don't meaningfully interrupt presence, then it's not a problem. Here, in addition to an absence, you have the act of accepting voluntary departure.
No, she didn't accept voluntary departure. That's a procedure.
Under Barragán and Romales, it's sufficient to have the departure.
How do I know whether anybody said anything to her? She could have said, oops, you're a customs guard, I'm leaving.
If there was improper conduct by the Border Patrol in removing the petitioner from the United States, those are arguments that have been waived because they were not raised before the immigration judge.
We don't know what the conversation was at all, do we, between
the
border guards,
and
so we have no idea.
Since this was not raised before the immigration judge or the Board of Immigration Appeals,
what she's arguing, though, is that the notice of rights and the due process standards were not followed. The kinds of the drill, if you will, the little script that's followed, couldn't. There's no evidence.
That only appears in an intimation in the petitioner's reply brief and an oral argument, and was not properly
but
raised before the agency.
There's no procedure. Well, never mind. I mean, it's all right.
Thank you. That concludes my answer.
Mr. Pollack?
Obviously, my reading of the certain absences section is that it's clear. It's clear enough, and the other sections in the statute are clear enough to show that there are only certain actions that will cut off continuous residence. Judge Wood, I think that your nightmare scenario of allowing the Attorney General to rewrite the Immigration Act could happen if we validate what is essentially border justice, which is not necessarily due process of law. There is a clear negative implication in the voluntary departure regulation that if someone complies with the voluntary removal order, if there is one, if there is an agreement, that they will remain eligible for cancellation of removal. In this case, the Border Patrol and the immigration system has the enforcement keys to cut off physical presence if it so chooses. And there's nothing that says that a voluntary removal, either under threat of removal, deportation, or not under threat of deportation, cuts off physical presence.
Well, Ms. Falk, since you've kind of delved into policy, what is it that you envision on these crossings? That each time there be some type of Miranda warning that attends leaving the country?
There has to be some sort of formal procedure if there's going to have legal consequence.
So with the floodgates, as you describe them, that that time-consuming process you think has to be in place with each departure?
I think that expedience has its benefits, but it should not cut off legal rights that are set forth in the statute.
You know, I'm just trying to tease out what you would suggest would be an appropriate...
Well, I think if the government wants to simply expediently remove people in the United States, then it has to accept certain consequences that it must recognize certain legal rights if they exist in the statute.
Thanks, Pollack. Thank you, Patel. The case is taken under advisement and.